turn to Ms. Wu on cross.
Ms. Wu, trying to pick up where we left off here. And again, I had drawn your attention to page 3.302, the exhibit 3.5-4 on that page. And just to confirm, so there are not context statements prepared for or available for each of the urban villages that would potentially be impacted by MHA, is that right?
Correct. But just because that's the case doesn't mean what's there shouldn't be used.
Okay. I understand.
It's good information.
Okay.
Not to be ignored.
Understood. I just asked if they've been prepared or not. The answer is no, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. And exhibit 16 was the HALA, the comment letter related to HALA. Does that ring a bell?
The ones that I have weren't labeled, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. The one dated June 30th?
2017. I'm sorry, I don't.
June 30th?
That sounds right. Sorry. Yes.
Okay.
And just to confirm, that wasn't an EIS comment letter, correct?
No.
Okay. And just backing way up to, well, let me just ask. So that was expressing concerns about HALA and MHA, which was being considered separately from the SEPA process we're discussing today. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Sorry, that was Exhibit 17?
16.
Or 16.
Exhibit 16.
Was your question whether they were just commenting on MHA or
then it wasn't part of the EIS process. It wasn't an EIS comment letter. That was my question.
So 16 says it's MHA comments on MHA draft environmental impact statement.
Okay.
So I'm just
thank you.
Not clear on.
I have two letters.
Was that? Okay. Yeah,
well, they both indicate draft environmental impact statement.
Mm. So 13 is the comp plan. I think, and 16 is the MHA comment, PEIS comment letter.
Okay, so I'm sorry, 13 was the
comp plan yes.
Letter. Okay. And I apologize because I'm cross-referencing from your exhibit list. So.
Oh, I see. And this, so the October 30th, 2015, exhibit 13 is the letter you were...
Correct.
The line of questions.
Yes.
All right, thank you. Do you want to re-ask the question in that context?
Sure. So again, and I apologize. So exhibit 13, okay, which was the comp plan amendment letter. You have that?
Yes.
Okay. And again, that wasn't part of your... part of comments with regard to the environmental impact statement that's at issue in this hearing, correct?
Yeah, the one from 2015 was comp plan and not MHA.
Okay, understood. And when Mr. Bricklin started out his questioning, he talked to you about your background. Now, and I just want to ask a couple questions on your background. You have never authored an environmental impact statement, correct?
No, not. I've worked on some when I worked in California.
Okay. And what you worked on them in what capacity?
So the the firm that I worked for is called Historic Resources Group, a preservation consulting firm, and they do a lot of, they're sub-consultants to larger consultants, and they focus on historic resources, sections of environmental impact. They don't call them EISs there, they call them something else.
Okay.
The same thing. So I was there. So as a staff person, I helped do research on components of that. So, but I never authored the whole thing.
Okay. And so you've never authored on behalf of a, and let me just say, on behalf of a lead agency like the City of Seattle.
Correct.
Okay. You have not authored an EIS, correct?
No.
And you have not authored a historic resources section of an EIS. Is that correct?
Correct.
And have you ever peer-reviewed a historic resources section EIS on behalf of a lead agency?
No.
When you were at Dawn, again, what was your role with regard to the city's historic resource preservation program?
I staffed two historic districts, the International Special Review District and the Columbia City Landmark District.
And can you remind me when you were there?
From December 21st, 1998 until end of April 2004.
Okay. And in the context of your work on behalf of Historic Seattle, do you still interact with the Historic Preservation Office? It's part of the Department of Neighborhoods?
Yes.
Okay. And since you left Dawn, have there been changes in the program or the administration of the Historic Resources Program?
The Historic Preservation Officer at the time when I was there retired, Karen Gordon. She retired a couple of years ago, I think. So Sarah Soat is the current Historic Preservation Officer. So there's been probably a couple of staff changes since I was there.
Okay, other than personnel turnover, is the approach that the office takes to the preservation of historic resources in Seattle generally the same?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Is the approach that they take, the work they do to preserve historic resources generally the same?
Yes.
Okay. And that office is governed by sections of the city code, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And are you aware if there have been changes in the city code related to the preservation of historic resources since you departed?
So, I'm just thinking, when I was there, there would be amendments, little amendments to the ordinances. But I think generally it's the same. I think they've updated the SEPA-related SEPA and historic preservation language, and there's a client assistant memo that's available. But yeah, I don't.
Okay. And how does that, when you talk about SEPA thresholds and updating it, can you just briefly describe how does that process work?
Sure. So
as you understand it.
So actually, when I worked at the city, some of the projects that I reviewed actually triggered SEPA. So there were new construction projects in the historic district, let's say, and so I became familiar with sort of categorical exemptions, and or maybe in addition to a historic building, that's how I became familiar with SEPA. And also I think DON at the time, this may have changed, when there was a project in a historic district or related to a landmark, I think the DON was the lead agency rather than the DPE at the time. So,
and has that changed?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. When you were referring to, I think, what was admitted as exhibit number 10, the greener, smaller, better publication.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about some historic districts, and you met in, I didn't get them all down, but you talked about Ballard, Pioneer Square, Columbia City, Pike Place Market, which you said is unique in and of itself. Are those districts either entirely or partially within the MHA study area that's subject to this environmental impact statement?
So some of them are exempt, like the ones in downtown. And then it's my understanding that the in the other ones that are in the study area, the districts are exempt from MHA.
Okay. And then others are, in fact, subject to the this FEIS? Is that right?
So they're subject, well, okay. So like Pioneer Square and the International Special Review District, they were not part of this study area. And there's the Ballin Avenue Landmark District, which I assume is part of the study area. I didn't look at the boundaries exactly on Columbia City, but because they're national register and local historic districts, they're exempt from MHA.
Okay. So you didn't look at the MHA study area and compare that to the historic districts that could be impacted here?
Not for every single one. I mean, I looked at the MHA maps over time, and because I think early on the districts were going to be exempt, so I didn't focus on them. So.
Okay. And then you made a comment, and I may not have written it down correctly, but you talked about a small percentage of these potential historic districts actually being designated. Do you recall that colloquy with Mr. Bricklin?
My 0.5%?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So that was related to the Preservation Green Lab's data and findings. And it's this one. I don't know what exhibit number this is.
11.
So on the back page, under on the lower left, where it says building and preservation facts, under Seattle, and locally designated, 0.5% of the buildings in Seattle were actually designated.
Okay, so this is not historic districts. This is landmarks, then, we're talking about. Is that right?
Let's see. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
So is that 0.5% of the total buildings in Seattle or 0.5% of the eligible buildings in Seattle?
I don't know. I didn't create this, so.
Okay.
But it,
so it's not clear?
It's. I would say probably of the total buildings because the eligible buildings are not finite. Because as the year, you know, there's the age threshold, right? So that changes every year. So more potentially eligible properties kind of come into the fold every year because there's not a stack.
Similar to my question about historic districts and special protections, my understanding is there are special protections for formally designated historic resources like landmarks. Is that correct?
And historic districts.
Okay. But when something is eligible, okay, which would include some of the data in the city survey or city database, correct? I mean, is there any special protection for those eligible properties?
Not unless Section 106 is involved.
And that's federal.
Or 0505, which is now it's like.
I'm sorry, and that's a federal statute?
Yes.
Okay. So.
But that's not necessarily protection. Again, it's a process to review.
Okay. So in terms of protection, you aren't. A building, for instance, is either a landmark, it's been formally designated, or it's not. Is that right?
Correct. But historic, locally designated historic districts also have protection, basically the same level of as protection. And a landmark isn't better than a historic district. And within a historic district, we have contributing and non-contributing resources. So a property that's in a potentially eligible district or a National Registered District that's yet to become a locally designated district. It may or may not, and that specific resource may or may not be an eligible to be an individual landmark, but in the context of a historic district, it contributes to the district and the character of the neighborhood. If they're in this proposed changes to land use policies and zoning could impact these potential contributing buildings to a potential district. So that's how it could be.
So there's some potential overlap between a district and some protection that might receive that a non-designated landmark might not otherwise receive. Is that right?
Yeah, I know I'm getting like could be confusing, but
it's getting late. It's warm in here. So. Okay. Could just turn back to the historic resources section of the EIS. and wanted to draw your attention to page 3.299, and it's looking at the top partial paragraph there, first full sentence, beginning with the word while. Are you with me?
3.299?
Correct.
Two lines down.
Oh, okay, got it.
Got it? So it says, while nearly all urban villages have properties listed in the database, 17 of those neighborhoods have yet to be systematically inventoried. Is that a correct statement?
Are there 27 or 28? What was the total number again? Because if there are 11 that have been systematically inventoried.
Sorry, I get to ask the question. Well, let me ask it a different way because I don't want to belabor the point. But while nearly all urban let's take the first phrase. Do you agree with the statement that nearly all urban villages have properties listed in the database? That is the city database.
Yes.
That's an accurate statement.
Right.
Okay. But not all of the neighborhoods have been systematically inventoried, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then you also discussed the alternatives discussion that begins generally, I think, near page 3.308.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that the percentages were confusing. Can you just elaborate on what you meant?
So I guess what I said this section was confusing because of the tie, the connection between what was being said and the growth rates and how it would even impact historic resources.
Do you agree with the general proposition that the greater the growth, the greater the potential impact on historic resources?
Yeah, logically, yes.
Okay. And if you look at page 3.308, there's a discussion of the no action alternative at the top. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
And it says that alternative wouldn't implement the MHA program, but would include the same growth estimate, resulting in an addition of 70,000 households based on the 2035 comp plan. You see that sentence?
I do.
Okay. And then it says, under alternative one, redevelopment, demolition, and new construction projects could occur in the study area. Is that an accurate statement in your view?
Yes.
Okay. Because right now, every day in the city of Seattle, there are historic resources, or at least potential historic resources, that are being demolished or altered in some way. Is that right?
Okay. Correct.
And that would be true under any of these impacts, is that right? I'm
yes.
sorry, under any of these
yes.
alternatives?
Yes.
Okay. And if you could turn to the first page of the historic resources section, which doesn't have a number on it, but I think it's 3.295. You see the underlined text on that page that carries over to the following page?
Yes.
Do you know why that's underlined?
Yes.
Why?
I believe that's a change from the DEIS.
Okay. And do you know, does any of this new text in the FEIS respond in any way to your comments that you made during the DEIS review process?
I think some of it does.
Okay. Can you say what part of it does?
Well, without looking at my comments and the response,
okay,
and then comparing it to this, I couldn't say line by line.
Okay. So. But it does respond, at least in part, to some of your comments?
Yes.
I don't have anything further.
Redirect.
On that last point, Ms. Wu, while it responds in part to your comments, does it respond adequately to your comments?
Not really.
Shortly before that, you were asked whether those growth percentage numbers stood basically for the proposition that the greater the growth rate, the greater the risk to historic resources. And you agree with that general proposition, right?
Yes.
And is that about the beginning and end of the EIS analysis of impacts from this project?
Objection leading.
Does the EIS go much deeper than that in analyzing the impacts of this project on historic resources than the proposition that the higher the growth rate, the greater the risk, and showing which neighborhoods have higher growth rates than others? Is there more analysis than that?
Not much more. They name some neighborhoods. But
that's what I said. And which neighborhoods have higher growth rates than others, right? But other than, you agree?
Yes, right.
No effort in any given neighborhood to analyze what the impacts are in that neighborhood, right?
No, it doesn't.
There was a lot of discussion about mechanisms in the city code or proposed in the mitigation measures for the protection of landmarks or potential future landmarks. Are all the historic are all the buildings that matter to you in terms of the historic character of a neighborhood destined to be landmarks, or are there other buildings that aren't landmark but still contribute to the historic character of a neighborhood?
There are definitely resources and buildings that aren't currently landmarked.
I'm not talking about just currently landmark, but that are, so for instance, you were talking earlier about historic significant areas like parts of Ballard and Central District and elsewhere. Is the character of a neighborhood that makes it significant mean that every building in that district is going to be a landmark?
No, not every building will be a landmark.
Right. Does the integrity of that area as a district, though, require that more than just the landmark buildings be protected?
Oh, yeah. In a historic district, as part of this cohesiveness that I talked about earlier, one of the factors in considering whether an area is potentially eligible to be a district is integrity, which is a physical integrity of the resources. So have there been significant alterations to the buildings, to the streetscape? So it's looked at as a whole. But if you chip away at it and more and more lots or parcels are demolished and or the buildings are changed or added on to significantly, and it diminishes the ability for that district to convey significance.
So if you're a resident of Ravenna-Cowan or the Central District or parts of Ballard that have this sort of cohesiveness in terms of some historic pattern of construction, all the homes are certain style built in the 1920s or whatever, are all those homes destined to be landmark status such that the landmark ordinance will protect the cohesiveness of that area?
No.
Does the fact that the city doesn't have this comprehensive inventories for all parts of the city suggest in any way that it shouldn't use the data that it does have in areas where it has the data?
No, they should use it.
Using that search form that you described when we were looking at the website screenshots, is it possible to zero in and find resources in the database on the specific blocks that are called out in the zoning ordinance for expansion of the UVs?
You can definitely get a list of the addresses and look those up and compare.
All right.
It just kind of a follow-up on the survey. So Historic Seattle, and it's referenced in the EIS, the Folke Nyberg, Richard Steinberg survey from the mid-70s. They're Historic Seattle surveys, and they're still used today, not just by us, but by consultants and architects who prepare landmark nominations and district nominations. The maps are used, the information that's there is still valid. When we do research and survey work, we always look to see what's been done before, and that provides a foundation to see what's changed. The history doesn't change.
And the fact that you've never peer-reviewed an EIS for the lead agency, does that, in your mind, undermine your ability to evaluate whether the information in this EIS is adequate for the public or decision makers?
No, I don't believe SEPA requires. I mean, anyone can review these and comment. Right. And the fact that I am in the historic preservation field, a professional, I understand what's being described generally and what's missing or lacking.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. Quinn.
Thank you.
Helen's next witness.
I'm Brenton Northman here with Paul Spencer Howard.
You okay there?
Yeah. I have my exhibits. We're getting started in a notebook, but without separate bindings or staples. Perhaps I could staple as I hand them out.
I'm just trying to help you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't have a staple.
Please state your name and spell it for the record.
My name is Spencer Howard, SpencerHoward.
And do you swear or affirm the testimony you provide in today's hearing will be the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Howard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Can you please tell us a little bit about who you are, starting with your employment?
I currently... I'm a co-founder and secretary of Northwest Vernacular, a historic preservation firm. We specialize in the built environment, so everything relating to historic preservation, above grade cultural landscapes and buildings. Before that, I was a partner with Artifacts Consulting. I worked with Artifacts for just about 15 years. And then I have a Master's of Science in Historic Preservation with a concentration in preservation design and technology.
And I take it you're familiar with historic resources with that background?
I am, yes. Northwest Vernacular, we're one of three firms that are currently on call with the University of Washington for their cultural resource needs. We're currently also working on the Uptown Urban Center survey and inventory and developing a historic context for Uptown. We are working on multiple rehabilitation projects in the city of Seattle, including the Macy's Building, the Harvard exit up on Capitol Hill, and the Louisa down in the International District. Also worked on with my previous firm as a lead on the Seattle Center Landmark Study and on the South Seattle Survey and Inventory. So it was a lot of survey work in South Seattle in about circa 2005.
Are you also familiar with EIS preparation with regard to historic resources?
I am, yes. I worked on with my previous firm on the Port of Bellingham, the former Georgia-Pacific site. It was the lead on preparing the historic properties technical resource component for that EIS. And then I was also the lead, also with my previous firm, on Port Gamble, which is a National Historic Landmark site, which is the most elite listing of historic properties. Doing the technical resource component for an environmental impact statement for the redevelopment of that historic district to bring back, basically redevelop and bring back historic density levels. They'd lost a lot of properties. And then I was also the lead on the technical report for the MHA University District EIS, doing the for the here in Seattle.
So you were actually involved on an EIS for an MHA proposal for a specific neighborhood?
Yes, for the University District.
What were you asked to do in this case?
To review the FEIS and to assess its adequacy relative to historic resources and impact on the Mount Baker Historic District.
Please walk us through the steps you took to prepare for that evaluation.
I reviewed Chapter 3.5 of the EIS and assembled available property data, GIS property data citywide, and then compared that available data to the EIS exhibits and data.
Including with respect to the proposed changes of the MHA?
Yes. So, it was, so part of what we wanted to understand is the information that we felt was missing from the FEIS, could that have been reasonably prepared and included in the development of an EIS? And so once we then collected that data, then we wanted to compare that with the study area and the proposed land use zoning changes to understand if it would have been a relevant tool set to have as part of the baseline data set.
Can you summarize the conclusions that you reached after doing this work?
We had four basic points: that the FEIS failed to adequately identify historic and cultural resources within the study area; two, that the FEIS did not adequately identify probable impacts on those resources; three, that the FEIS fails to consider the significant historic resources in Mount Baker Park.
Objection. He's reading from notes. I would ask if he could refrain from using notes. He needs to have his memory refreshed.
I don't have any objection to using notes, but if you're using notes, we'll need that as an exhibit.
Absolutely.
And if it's possible to get a copy of that now so the city can follow along. Is that something we can do? Do you have copy with you?
Do you want to take a break and get an electronic copy? Or
do you have an electronic copy you could send? How many pages?
You could probably get.
Yeah, and I don't.
Is this a report or just a summary or what is it?
It's kind of footnotes to help me basically keep on schedule and to move through without getting into too many segues.
How many pages is it?
It's 8 pages, and then I also have exhibits cross-referenced to know which ones are coming up.
That's fine. We'll take care of that. We'll run a copy. We're just stopping.